Hello, and welcome to The Raw Bar. I'm Goddess Cecilia, pleasure educator and consultant, and I will be your host. I've invited my friends and colleagues to sit, snack, get real, and probably a little salty about sexuality and pleasure. We've also saved a seat for you. And because of the nature of this podcast, we want to make sure that you're aware that there will be conversations about sexuality, sexual acts, probably some spicy language, and a bunch of other things that are definitely not appropriate for younger ears. So give yourself some solo time if you can. Grab a drink like tea, wine, water, or boba. Don't forget your snackies. Ease in and get comfy. Here's to a pleasurable time together. This season of Raw Bar with Goddess Cecilia is brought to you by MysteryPleasureBox.com. Surprise yourself with a subscription to MysteryPleasureBox.com, a fun and affordable way to discover new sex toys and novelty products every month, billed and delivered discreetly. You get an arsenal of potions, lotions, sex toys, and bedroom accessories picked by industry experts. Every box you receive is packed with high-quality, full-size, brand-name products from brands you know and love. So sign up at MysteryPleasureBox.com and use code GODDESS for 10% off your first box. Welcome to Raw Bar. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for inviting me. It's such an exciting time that we get to spend here together.
Yeah. All right. Let me read your bio before I get ahead of myself.
Go for it.
All right. Hunter Riley, pronouns she, her, can accurately be described as a professional pervert. She's the director of education and outreach at Self Serve Toys in New Mexico, occupied Tiwa land. She's a sex educator, speaker, video and audio smut creator, stripper, and more. She helps adults of all genders find their voice and comfort level around conversations about sex, bodies, and relationships. And I want to read the rest of your bio because I love it.
Okay.
After earning degrees in psychology, Spanish, and journalism, she moved on to teaching classes in English and Spanish about pleasure, sex toys, communication, safer sex, consent, oral sex, kink, non-monogamy, birth control, and more. She has authored several sex columns for newspapers and online media outlets in New Mexico, including The Daily Lobo, The Santa Fe Reporter, and Albuquerque Free Press. She has partnered with organizations like Planned Parenthood, the University of New Mexico, UNM Hospital, Clase Comunitario, Santa Fe Care Center, and more. Yeah. I read that in my brain, and then I was like, I know this.
No, it's hard when you're reading something out loud, like it takes that 1 to 2 seconds for your brain to catch up to what your mouth is doing. So I get that.
That's literally my life. I'm going to explain that to my partner later because he's always, I don't understand how you tell stories. And I'm like,
yeah, hold on, wait, what?
Exactly. So really, just before I get into my questions, I just want to put this out there into the world, like how you and I met.
Yes.
We met at Sexy Summer Camp.
We sure did.
I don't know if my first year was also your first year. I don't think it was.
I don't think so. I think because I had been a few times. I don't remember exactly when you came along the way. I think it was maybe my second year, maybe.
I want to say 2016 was the first
year. It was either my second or third year, I think, then in that case.
Yes. And at that point, even though I had been working within the sex toy industry for a really long time, that was the first time I was really like immersed with other sex educators.
Yeah.
And I just remember being like, oh my God, Hunter's so cool.
I felt like the same about you though. And I was just like, who is this amazing human? And I felt, I don't know, it's a very special place to be able to go and go to a conference, especially like outside of a major city, because you just, that's what you do. So I think it's such a cool place to be able to like be immersed in the woods with people that you don't know. And you just are like, you're amazing. Oh my God. Totally mutual. Totally mutual.
Oh. And so, yeah, if that was 2016, oh my God, I just tried to do math.
Don't try.
It's been 6 years.
Don't even do it. It's all a lie. It's all a lie.
It's a construct. It's also a real thing.
It's
sure.
Also totally real. Yeah. Time, on the other hand, totally false.
so fucking false. Just throw it out the window.
Yes.
So at that point, I feel like it really helped me see too, like what was full, like in the industry. But I want to now find out, like, how did you get into sex ed? Like your specific sex ed origin story.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. So I think that I have, and I think maybe this is true for a lot of us who are in this industry, where we've oftentimes been like that friend who's maybe shares a little bit too much or knows things or is like very curious about things. And so I was definitely that friend, and I was at the University of New Mexico earning my degrees, and I was working at the Daily Lobo, and I pitched it to my editor that I was like, let's do a sex column. This would be fun. And I think it's a good place because college students oftentimes are having sex and we want to make sure they're doing it well and know what's up. So I started writing a sex column. And as part of that, I was directed to Self-Serve Toys, which is where I work now. Somebody told me I should go talk to them because they were like a resource center in town. And I went and talked to them and like completely fell in love with the environment and the space and just the concept that there could be like a whole ass business dedicated to this. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. So I finished my degrees, and I actually, After using them as a source for a few of my stories, I basically went to them and I was like, can I volunteer here? What can I do to help you all? This is such a great space. I just want to be involved. So I started out as a volunteer and I was helping them like sweep and mop floors after their events and stuff. Like I just wanted to be in the space no matter what I was doing.
Yeah, I get that.
And yeah, exactly. So then I basically decided I was doing journalism. I had been doing journalism for a long time at that point, and I decided to make a shift into a different field. And I really felt called to do sex education because I felt really engaged when talking about it. People were telling me that it seemed like I was very comfortable talking about it, and that I seemed to have a knack for having these discussions that can normally be like very awkward, and that I just was able to do it. So I was like, let me try this out. So I basically had been volunteering at Self-Serve, and then I believe they were like looking for, I think they were hiring for a sales associate sex educator position. And then a few months after that, they basically were like, would you like to be our store manager? And I was like, wow, okay, sure. I don't have any experience in this, but I'm down to learn on the job. Let's figure this out.
Nice.
So that was almost 13 years ago now, actually. I've been at Self-Serve for, I think, all either 12 or 13 years. And I've since moved on from the store manager position, and I've been lots of things. Currently, my title there is the Director of Education and Outreach. So I teach a lot of our classes, and I schedule a lot of the classes that we do with other folks. And I do a lot of outreach in the community. So I work with like healthcare providers and medical professionals to help them be more sex positive with their patients and in their practice, and lots of kind of random things here and there around the business, and like a multi-tool employee. Like, what do we need? Do we need someone on the floor? I got it. Do we need someone to teach a class? I got it. So, nice. But yeah, I've been there now for almost 12 or 13 years, and it's just a really lovely place to work. And I'm so excited that I get to be a part of it.
That's awesome. This wasn't a question that I wrote down, but now I'm wondering it.
Do it.
With your background in journalism, do you find that were you more of the like writing articles journalist or the like reporting?
A little bit like of everything. Yeah, it was mostly writing articles. I was a reporter, like a news reporter for a while. I did culture reporting. Mm-hmm. I did columns. I then got into some copy editing and doing the sort of back end stuff. So I did a little bit of everything, but I spent quite a lot of time just writing articles as a reporter, as a beat reporter.
Cool. Was that sort of your favorite mode of journalism? I don't know if that's the right word.
Yeah, that's a good question. So it's interesting because I think that for writing, I think I'm like good enough at writing for it to be easy for me. And that's pretty mostly because I've just had years and years of practice. Like, I don't think I'm like particularly skilled at writing, but I just, this like blunt force method where I just did it for so long. And in the like college newspaper, like it was a daily paper, be days where I would have three articles due, and like, I'd be like, great, I'm doing all of these interviews today and typing all of this up today. So I just got really good at writing it and just doing that a lot. And I would say, as far as a way of consuming media, I actually really prefer like radio and audio stuff. So it's interesting because like I did a lot of writing, and I like writing. It's certainly interesting, but I wouldn't necessarily say that I'm like particularly skilled at it. I just did it enough that I can do it easily now. But definitely like when I was writing, like my stuff got marked up. Like I had a lot of passive voice this and like, why did you make this sentence go on for 10 million years kind of thing. So certainly my stuff always got edited pretty heavily, but I was fine with that because I really liked my editors and I trust them to do their jobs. And that's the cool part about journalism is that you have like reporters and writers who are out there doing the things like what I was very good at. And I think these skills translate to sex ed a lot was interviewing. And I found that interviewing was really something that just felt really good to me. And when I was doing it, I felt, oh, I love talking to people. I love just asking questions, or I love just shutting my mouth and listening to them and just like listening to what they have to say and seeing where a conversation leads. So I think the interviewing was really what I liked about it. And then the writing, I just made it work. So that's, but as far as like consuming media, I'm actually much more of an audio person and I love podcasts and radio.
Yeah.
Like I don't read a ton of news these days.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I had a subscription to several news things once upon and I don't know what I was doing because I'm so bad at email.
Yeah, so, like, listen, I can barely get this shit together on my own.
It was very cute when I tried.
Yeah. You're like, I have a hard time reading my own emails. I'm probably not going to read this thing. Yeah, yeah. I feel that.
Thank you, though. Thanks.
Unsubscribe.
Now, I also love that you studied Spanish. Mm-hmm. I feel like I almost said specifically like where you live, it makes a lot of sense. But I just feel like it makes a lot of sense like everywhere in the United States.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. And like, I love that you're able to use that specifically for sex ed too, because speaking as someone who lives in New England and someone who does not have very good like Spanish speaking stuff going on, I can understand it better than I can
speak. Yeah.
It's the same with Filipino. That's just like how my brain is now. But like the importance of having the ability to speak about sex topics in different languages is such an important skill. And so do you think that the topics that you cover specifically with like Spanish speaking folks are like different in any way from non-Spanish speaking folks?
I would say there are definitely trends that are really interesting to observe. One of my very dear friends, she's actually, this is my like self-serve staff mug from years ago. This is Tati. So Tatiana and I worked a lot with Enlace Comunitario, and we did these presentations on a like once or twice a year basis where we'd go in. They have a program just all about, they're predominantly like a domestic violence prevention organization, like within immigrant communities. And they have a course called, which is a healthy relationship building course. So we would go in once or twice a year and do the sex talk. And we always thought it was really funny because we would offer up a chance for people to like ask questions throughout the presentation. And then we also had an opportunity for them to write down questions. And we always got so many questions about anal sex, so many questions about butt stuff that every time we did it, we were like, you got some butt stuff questions? Yeah, me too. Okay. So it was like, for some reason in that class in particular, like lots of questions about butt sex. That was one theme that we always thought was funny because it came up so consistently in our discussions. But I think the other thing too, that I hear a lot of people talk about is they just say that there's a lot of like shame and stigma, taboo. I think for a lot of cultures, that's true. But I think it was what I have heard and just listening to people's experiences of their upbringing, that it's very strong in a lot of Latinx cultures. And it's very, very much like, we just don't talk about it. We just don't talk about it. So I think for some folks, they're like, oh, we talked about it, but it was awkward and I didn't get adequate information. And I think what I've heard a lot from doing those presentations is that it's just not talked about. One really interesting point that someone made is they said that their grandmother one time like sat them down in front of the TV and put on the Discovery Channel. And that was the birds and the bees talk. And I was like, oh, okay, interesting. So like, looking at all these different ways that like sex is like stigmatized and taboo. And then how there's some people who are like trying to work around that. What are the tools they use? Because oftentimes none of us have the tools. So it's then people who don't know about the thing trying to teach people who, it's like, it's hard because it's hard when you're not educating anybody about it.
That's so true.
Yeah. So I have heard that in that little anecdote of someone saying that, yeah, my grandma put on the Discovery Channel to teach me about sex. And I was like, oh, okay. Hey man, if you've got a tool in your arsenal, like sure, use it. But definitely that it was just not really talked about. And that for a lot of people, then that just took a lot of time to get to a point where they feel like they could talk about it with friends, with partners. So that definitely was a sort of a theme that I saw in a lot of the classes that I've done for Enlace and for some of the other places. But definitely the butt stuff, man. Butt stuff, very exciting, very popular in all of the presentations that I've done. But it's never verbally spoken. It's always written down, the like anonymous written questions. It's always how I got those questions was because someone was like writing it down and it was anonymous. So I always thought that was interesting too.
I feel like specifically with butt stuff, especially in sex ed, like the muggles, I guess, I would call them. I feel like that's definitely a topic that's maybe we'll talk about it, but not everyone's just like, hey, put butt sex on those questions paper because it's going to get answered. Some people are just like, I'm just going to wonder about it, but I'm not going to say anything or I'm not going to write it down because people will know it's me. And it's,
yeah, absolutely. And there was definitely a lot of discussions too around like pain during just sex in general, but like really normalizing and saying, hey, it's actually like, it shouldn't hurt. And if it does hurt, probably do something to help it not hurt. And so that was a big conversation point as well, just for all kinds of sex, that like, this should feel good. It's about pleasure. It's about connection. It's about intimacy. And it doesn't have to be about penetration. It doesn't have to be about orgasm. And that if pain is present, there's probably something that you can do to address that pain.
Amen.
Yeah, I know.
Oh my gosh. Do you find that realize that like the way that sexuality topics are talked about, like in Filipino culture, are going to be super different from non-Filipino culture. In different Latinx cultures are going to be a little bit different. And even like regionally, I feel like New England, Puritans, all the Puritans everywhere. Like I don't know if this is how it is where you are, but like, you can't even buy alcohol on Sundays until it's noon.
Same here.
Okay. What's up with that?
What about brunch? Okay.
What about brunch, people? The most important meal of the day, in my personal opinion.
Agreed. If I could just have brunch every day, I feel like it's me living my best life.
Agreed. So what would you say is the temperature of like how people view sexuality in Albuquerque?
Yeah, I think Albuquerque seems to be a very kind of cool and unique place where we have a lot of, for lack of a better term, like cultural mixing. So we have a lot of different folks here, and it's also like the fuzzy border. Like we're close to the border. So there's like, when I took a Southwest studies class, they talked about the fuzzy border where it's, yes, there's the actual border. And then there's like there's like the space around the border and that New Mexico falls into that. And Albuquerque, I think, is pretty interesting because there is a lot of different sort of cultural influences here. And I think one of my trans friends said that Albuquerque is like a trans oasis. So there's we have the Transgender Resource Center here. So if you all don't know about the Transgender Resource Center of New Mexico, check them out because they're doing amazing work to help trans people in Albuquerque and beyond. So it's a really interesting spot because in some of the more rural areas of New Mexico, it's oftentimes a lot more like conservative. And then you have places like Albuquerque and Santa Fe, maybe Taos, maybe some parts of even Las Cruces that are maybe a little bit less conservative or more progressive. So it's just an interesting spot because there's a little bit of there seems to be like a little bit of everything. And working in a sex shop, I find that it's not, everybody who comes in is a queer progressive person. It's like oftentimes you're getting somebody's like conservative grandma who's a little bit terrified to be in a sex shop, but like their doctor told them they had to come in. Right? They had to get a dilator, they had to get lube or something. So it's really interesting because we don't have, all of our customers are like this, where I think sometimes in some of the more coastal areas, you'll see, quote unquote, everybody's queer. That's not the case in Albuquerque. Right. There's definitely a lot of people who don't subscribe to that culture, who aren't necessarily involved in it. So I think it's just really cool because in Albuquerque, we have a little bit of everything. And if you're making assumptions about people and what they think and what they believe, you're probably wrong. Or like you're wrong some of the time. So it definitely is a really good practice that I've tried to get into for myself, is just really not assuming things about people and not assuming that because someone looks a certain way or because they're acting a certain way or even because they're asking certain questions that I know anything that indicates anything about them as a person. Because it's a beautiful, lovely thing to be wrong. And it's a beautiful, lovely thing to be surprised. So sometimes I will make an assumption about somebody and then they'll be like, no, I don't do that. And I'm like, oh, thank you. Thank you for bringing me back down to the real world here where people are infinite and nuanced and it's not fair or right to like assume that you know something about somebody because of whatever, what they're wearing, what they're buying, the music they're listening to. So I like that Albuquerque is always keeping me on my toes and always keeping me surprised. And I really try and embrace that because I think that's one of the cool things about the sort of sex positive scene in Albuquerque, and just the scene in Albuquerque in general, is that you'll totally find people who are like, yes, I want to come to your non-monogamy meet and greet. And I am like a very conservative person. And that, like, sometimes in my head, I'm like, what? But I'm like, oh, no, people exist all across this area. It's not fair to assume that because someone is non-monogamous, they're also going to be liberal or progressive. So like that kind of thing, I think, just plays on itself regularly. And I really appreciate that reminder to see people in their entirety and really recognize that you just have no fucking clue sometimes.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. I do love that about humans in general. There's such a like varied amount of ways of looking at things, and like the ability to learn from another person, even if you have a bunch of things in common with them, just to hear their perspective is sometimes the best.
Absolutely.
Take you out of your own place for a little bit. Was it, so I feel like we're still a little bit reeling, right? Because trauma works in mysterious ways. Not really, but the past 2 years of the pandemic, and beyond that, the however many years that we were in the hellhole that was the Trump administration.
The Trump exactly. Yes.
In the time that you've been working there, did you see any sort of like shifts in the way that people either talked about your work or about self-serve or like, I wonder, because specifically, like myself, I personally have never worked at like a brick and mortar store and at home party stuff. So I feel like I don't get a view of what that's like to be at the brick and mortars.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And I think so. Self-serve's been an interesting place because we are like a very much out, like we for a long time have been like, have said, like we're a woman-owned business, which is true. And we're a queer-owned business, which is true. We have never been like small about that. That's always been like a big part of our brand and who we are and what differentiates us from other shops around town. So for a long time, we were having like vandalism at our shop, and we were having like rocks thrown through our windows and just like all sorts of shit on an ongoing basis. So that was one thing that we dealt with that was very challenging. I don't exactly even remember the exact timing of that. It might've been before 2016, but it was really prolific and certainly is something that was really hard to deal with. And I think is probably still happening in some ways. We recently had to replace a window, and we're not sure if it was just like a, it was like an accident or if it was like intentional. So we're calling it an accident for now. It's definitely in the back of my mind. I was talking to Mady, the store owner, and I was like, ooh, this is like bringing up the PTSD for me from like when this used to happen to us. And we used to come in every week and be like, are we going to have a window this week? So it was like, that's still there. I still feel that. And it's, you suspect everything now, right? You're like, was that intentional or was that an accident? So that definitely happens. We've, as far as the pandemic, we were closed for a long time. I think almost 18 months, maybe. Now we're in-store shopping, and we really tried to make it so that we weren't asking our employees to go into a retail setting during the pandemic when, and this was especially when like we didn't have access to vaccination, that kind of thing. We really made a decision to prioritize the health and safety of our employees. And pretty much all of our employees were like, yeah, I know, I don't really want to work in a retail setting right now. And so we were able to make that decision. And it was very fortunate that we could make that decision because not everybody can. So that really changed a lot about how we do business. Having a brick and mortar retail store, one of the things we do is we have demos out of all of our products.
Yep.
And we were like, shit, people literally come here to touch everything, right? And so now this is more challenging. Like, how do we do this? So now we're still having people wear masks in the store. We're having people sanitize their hands when they come in just to try and eliminate any potential sort of contact spread or anything. But definitely it's made us rethink just like cleanliness in general. I was joking. I'm like, even outside of COVID, like we should have been doing this stuff before. We were like, oh, we washed our toys and our demos and everything. We did that, but not enough given how many people come in and pick them up. We used to have the lube tester bottles so you could smell and taste the lubes before you decided to buy one. But we decided to actually make it available upon request, but it's not just open to everybody because it's nasty if you think about it, that one person's like squeezing this lube on their finger and then smelling it or licking it. And then they're like, oh, maybe I'll move on to this other one. And then you're like, wait. You licked that finger. So it's, there's like these small things that we didn't think about as much beforehand. And now we have a disinfection checklist that we do twice a day and on top of all these other things. So it's just, there's just more steps and processes now, but I'm pretty sure that everybody feels really good about it. And also we're like, we should have been doing this shit before. People were nasty before too.
So true. I remember thinking that in the beginning and being like, y'all.
Yeah. What have we done? I know.
I guess we relatively-ish survived up until then.
And it was one of those things, too, where it's, oh, is this why when one of us got sick, all of us got sick? Yeah, okay.
Germ theory.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So those are certainly some of the changes that I've seen. We were definitely a little bit nervous reopening. Are people going to be okay with wearing a mask? But one of the things that's just really great about one, setting really clear expectations is that for most people, if they know the expectations, they're fine to abide by them. We have a little sign on our door that says, please wear a mask. And if you're unable to wear a mask or you don't want to, you can always shop online. Like, we recognize that everybody's coming at this from a different place, and we really want to try and meet people where they're at. So if you're like, no, I never want to wear a mask, there's still an option for you. And that's to go home and shop online and do curbside pickup or something. So really trying to recognize that there's ways where we can really try and still serve our community. And especially because wearing masks have become so politicized, people still deserve access to pleasure, and trying to give them options to say, hey, if you don't want to have a mask on, here's this other option, right? Mm-hmm. But to come into the store, you do need to have a mask on. So it's just taken added a few more steps to the process, but it feels really good to be able to like deal with these sort of problems when they come up and figure out, okay, how are we going to tackle this? And how do we tackle this that's also aligned with our ethics?
Yeah.
We're very much not about just being like, oh, okay, bye. You're completely disposable because you don't agree with our perspective 100%. That's not the approach we want to take. And so we've been really fortunate to be able to like have a bunch of meetings. Are always having meetings, right, with like our management and with our staff about like, how do we keep this space safe and secure for everybody? And also, how do we recognize that not everybody is going to agree on these things? So we have to also figure out some workarounds so that we can make sure that the people who want to access this space can still have access to it. And we're keeping in mind the safety of the people who are in the actual physical space.
Right. And so much of that, all of that you just described too, I feel like can easily be translated into like sex ed conversation. And it's right. One of those things where I don't know the answer to this, but I do wonder all the time, like, we learned anything, and can we transfer that information into these sex ed topics or sexuality topics that you may or may not have questions about?
Yeah, I think like really thinking about like harm reduction has helped change and shift my perspective a lot. It's unrealistic to expect that everybody's going to be on the same page about something. It's unrealistic to expect that everybody's going to follow the quote unquote best advice. And you just have to know that some people just aren't. And that doesn't make them a bad person. That doesn't mean that they're disposable and should be thrown away. It just means that we're all a little bit different, and we can probably figure out a way to move forward that also maintains the health and well-being of everybody involved. And so that can totally apply to sex, where it's like, if you're hooking up with somebody and they're like, oh, I haven't been tested in years, does that make them a bad person? No. Does it mean that you can find other things to do maybe that are still like connection and pleasure and intimacy focused, but that maybe reduce a likelihood of potential STI transmission if that's something that someone's dealing with? I think it does absolutely apply to sex, because those same kinds of skills can be used when you're thinking about connections with people.
Yeah. So now let's pivot into your work in the sex work industry. Mm-hmm,
absolutely. Yes.
All right. Now, how would you say, and I feel like there's potentially a bunch of different ways to answer this, but for you specifically, like, how does the sex work industry interact and intersect with the sex ed world?
Let's take a quick break. Check in with your body. What do you need? Do you need to stretch? Do you need to use the restroom? Do you need some extra water? Do whatever you need to take care of you, and we'll be right back. If you're enjoying the Raw Bar podcast and you're wanting to learn a little bit more about specific sexuality topics, check out my Dive Deeper series on YouTube. In Dive Deeper with Goddess Cecilia, I touch on specific topics like waterproof adult toys, self-pleasure health benefits, and postpartum depression. It's the same sassy me, but in video format. And I do it all while wearing a mermaid tail. Sometimes I'm on location at a tropical destination, and sometimes I'm sitting on my seashell throne. As your pleasure guide, this is a personal invitation to you to explore all the ebbs and flows of pleasure and self-care. It's my honor to bring a little whimsy and magic to a topic that has historically been so taboo. A new Dive Deeper drops monthly on YouTube, so make sure you search for Dive Deeper with Goddess Cecilia and subscribe.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. And I've been contemplating this a lot because I find that, like, of all the different jobs that I do, like, they're all very, there's like a core theme that runs through all of it. And then there's these additional little flourishes on the side. So I do sex ed in the strip club because people sometimes will ask me, like, if I have another job outside, and I'm in a place in my life where I get to be really open about that. And a lot of people aren't, but for me, I'm able to be. And so it's interesting, like, I had a conversation with somebody about, like, butt plugs and, like, why it's important to have a flared base. And this is, like, while giving a lap dance, right? So it's funny because a lot of that kind of stuff just, like, happens in different areas. And I think that, not to say that this certainly is not every sex worker's experience, but I feel like sex ed is, like, the theoretical sometimes, and then sex work is, like, the practical. There are certainly elements of sex ed that are totally practical. There's elements of sex work that are theoretical. But I like that it's interesting to be talking to people about how important, like, pleasure and connection are, and how important it is if you're a person who likes touch, like, to get that need met. And then to go into the strip club and have somebody be like, I have never held somebody's hand and I just want to sit here and hold your hand for three songs. And I'm like, absolutely. Okay, we can do this. So it's cool that, like, I get to do that in these different ways and they inform each other. Also told, I had somebody who I was talking to at the strip club, and they were like, they were saying, oh, I've heard about self-serve. Like, I've always wanted to come to one of the classes, but I didn't want to come with my girlfriend because I thought it would be weird if I thought the teacher was attractive or something, or if the teacher was, like, doing something sexy. And I was like, oh, don't worry. Like, I really try hard to make it completely not sexual. And I try really hard to desexualize everything that I'm saying and talking about in that space, because for a lot of people, that's really not what they want. And it's not the point of it. The point of my sex ed is not to turn you on. The point of my sex ed is really just to give you information, education, and resources so that you can go get your needs met outside, right? Outside of this space. Oh, my cat might join us for this part. Oh. Hi, baby. So it's really interesting because I get to, like I said, talk about these things, like, theoretically, and then also have this sort of practical element of going and really talking to people about, just talking about what their needs are and what their desires are. And people oftentimes will say, oh, I can't, I have this terrible secret dirty fantasy. And then I'm like, do you want to share it with me? And oftentimes the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. And then I get to be like, you're normal. That's not a terrible secret. There are hundreds, thousands, maybe millions of other people out there who have that exact same fantasy. And if you're looking to live out that fantasy, there's probably a way you can do it. So it's interesting because I feel like they inform each other a lot, the two sort of different elements of those industries. And it's a really cool and special place to be able to do both. And like I said, I really try to make sure that anything that I'm doing at self-serve is really desexualized, because I don't want that to come into that space. I want the attendees of my classes and the people who come into the shop and my coworkers to feel like that's not appropriate in that space. There are lots of spaces where that's appropriate, and that's not one of them. So just making those clear distinctions, I think, for people can help them also feel a little bit more comfortable engaging in both spaces.
I do, however, really like the idea of cat you butt. Like, have, oh, hello, cat butt. Oh, I'm really liking the idea, though, of, like, during, let's say, like, one of your lap dances, that there's, like, a projection of a PowerPoint presentation behind you, and you're, like, doing a lap dance and also, like, pointing out specific things. Like, I'm just saying, it could be cool. Nice. Or maybe the projection could somehow end up on your, like, bikini.
Have it printed on the bikini. The difference between water-based and silicone-based lube. The left boob is water-based. The right boob is silicone-based. And my butt is
oil-based. I'm very into that. I'm very into that, and I would buy that.
I love it.
I'm just saying. Not that you don't have a bajillion things going on, but
someone who's listening to this. There you go.
Please, and thank you. And give us both a discount.
Yeah, let us know.
Please. Because it was our idea. TM. Oh, trademark.
It's so funny. I love it.
That's not how trademarking works, I know. But
Not quite. I wouldn't know, but I've heard.
I'm just saying it doesn't make it true, I think.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh. But I do love that, though, because I feel like sometimes there's often this idea where obviously there's like the spaces where you're providing information. And yes, this is health information, holistically, that you're providing. And that's not a space where like someone's supposed to be getting off, essentially. Right. And I think that the way that people think about sex work is that it is often so separated sometimes from sex ed or from like feminism sometimes. Mm-hmm. There's conversations with people about that too. And you're just like, no, there's like really just so much happening and there's so much like connectedness to it. And they can coexist, even if they're not being utilized in the same space all at the same time, right? That there's still, at least I've seen it sometimes, or even in like sex ed spaces, there's this weird leaning towards, are you about to say something like sex work negative? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. Or like anti-porn or that, like that sort of thing.
Yeah, I think that definitely does happen. And again, it's always interesting to be surprised and can be fun to be surprised when you're like, oh, interesting. Okay, I would not expect that position or whatever thought to come up here. But I think one of the other interesting things about sex work specifically is that sometimes you're like, you're instructing or teaching people just by modeling. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I do before I start a lap dance is I'll always ask somebody like, hey, is there any place on your body where you don't want to be touched or you have any like pain or discomfort? I want to make sure you're comfortable. And for most people, like that question like blows their mind and they're like, what? No one's ever asked me that question. And so even just by asking that question, you're modeling what it looks like to give and to ask, to check in with somebody and have some sort of consent-based conversation. Right. And then oftentimes then people are like, oh, wait, what about you? And I'm like, there we go. Yes. Wow. And so like, I ask you and then you ask me, right? And I will enforce my boundaries. So if you touch me in a way that's not okay with me, I will remove your hand. I will tell you to stop. And if you do that more than once, like I will probably just end the lap dance, right? Because you're not respecting my boundaries. And so I have that conversation however many times in a day. But for a lot of people, that question just blows their mind a little bit. And they're like, oh, no one's ever asked me that. And I think for a lot of people too, they go to a strip club or somewhere and they just don't know what the rules are. So oftentimes they just end up making like crossing people's boundaries because they just didn't know. And so I've had so many people say, oh, it's a really big relief to hear this, to hear you say this, because I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what was okay. And I don't want to be disrespectful, but I had no idea. For a lot of people, they're just like coming to this realization that they can ask about it and they can talk about it, but that's not something that I'm like sitting there teaching them. It's just something that I'm doing as part of my best practices for lap dances. And then in that experience, they're like, oh, we can have these kinds of conversations with people. And I'm like, yeah, absolutely. You can ask these questions to your partner or to a hookup or whatever, your friends. So it's just like the teaching by doing, or like the modeling thing that I think can be pretty powerful for a lot of people.
Love that. I really love that. And my God, I hope that they do take that and run with it.
Fingers crossed.
In a way. Have you seen, so this is another like reflection question about the past several years. Have you seen the sex work industry change a lot in the past? Again, like COVID.
Right.
Trump.
Yeah.
So many, I feel like we've gone through so many lifetimes in the past.
Yeah.
Years.
Yeah. Yeah. My mom was saying, she was like, I think I'm done living through like once in a lifetime events. And I was like, yeah, man, me too. Feel that. So yes, definitely. I think when the pandemic first happened and a lot of people were sheltering in place or things were closed down, certainly there was a big sort of people jumping on OnlyFans, and that certainly became a popular thing for a lot of people to do because they were at home a lot. So I think OnlyFans definitely, it was already pretty big, but I think it definitely blew up in a new way when the pandemic happened. I think one of the really cool things that I've seen is I've seen a lot of like virtual strip shows, which is cool. People are doing strip shows virtually, and I love that. And I think that's a really great way for folks to engage if they're not able to or not wanting to come into a strip club. I will say that COVID, strip clubs are not particularly like COVID friendly or not particularly COVID safe, just based on the act itself, that you're one times at a bar, so people are eating and drinking, so they're taking their masks off if they're even wearing masks, depending on the local regulations. There's a lot of like close contact and like heavy breathing, right? You as the dancer, you're active, you're swinging around a lot, and you're certainly doing physical activity, so you're heavy breathing. If people are like getting turned on, right, they might be doing some heavy breathing. Lap dances are oftentimes like close contact thing, like face to face. I joked that like when I first came back, I was definitely more of a face away kind of person because I was like, this feels safer. I'll show you my butt, but I don't want to like I don't want to get close up in your face. So I think there's definitely have been a lot of sort of changes in general. I think a lot of people are looking at more online options for doing sex work because it did become less safe and a little bit scarier for a lot of people to be doing in-person sex work.
Yeah. Would you say that actually, let me rethink how I'm going to ask this question. The online sex work, I feel like some would like to say that it's always existed as long as the internet has existed.
Yeah.
And also it's changed so much, especially with like OnlyFans and all of that, different platforms that exist out there. I actually have two questions about
this. Yes.
Would you say that you personally, do you have preference or are you able to do things that you wouldn't normally get to do like in person, let's say?
Yeah.
Doing it online?
Yeah. So I think it depends a little bit on like the terms of service of the places that you're doing things online, certainly. But I think certainly one of the benefits of OnlyFans is that, or like any online platform really, is that there's people who would never come to a strip club in Albuquerque, New Mexico, because they don't live in New Mexico or because whatever. So the fact that I can reach people in different states and different countries and different parts of the world, I think is really excellent. And I love that. And I love that you're like, I would probably never know you because whatever, you live in Germany and I do not. So I think that's really cool. Like the ways you might find people is very expanded by online sex work. And I think that's really cool. You can also do a lot of cool like cross promotional marketing with other people in other areas that you couldn't really do otherwise. So that's really neat. And I really like that part of it. I'm a very touch based person. Like certainly touch is very important to me, both giving and receiving. So I really like the in-person stuff because I actually enjoy, like, obviously within, I'm within the rules of the establishment that I'm working in, but really recognizing that for a lot of people, they don't get the touch that they need and that doing in-person work can fulfill that need for a lot of people. Like I said, I've had people come in and they just want me to hold their hand for a few songs, or they just want me to sit on their lap and just talk to them because they just like the feeling of having somebody close to them. Right. So I think there's certainly benefits for all of it, but for me, I have really learned it. And I recognize like when the pandemic was happening, certainly for lots of reasons, my mental health was suffering. But as soon as literally as soon as the strip club opened back up, I was like, I'm so excited. I missed this. This was a big part of my mental health, like specifically the dancing aspect of it and like the physical activity, but also the touch part, really recognizing that for a lot of people, they don't get the touch that they need. And that can really impact their lives in a negative way. So being able to provide that, I think, is a really special thing.
Yeah. And I feel like that's something that so many people don't think about when they think about sex work, right? Mm-hmm. That it's sometimes just touch.
Right.
Like the touch aspect can be completely non-sexual, still fulfill such a big need because we are human. And that is literally like one of the things that like help us thrive. Into adulthood even.
I think so. And I think really feeling good in our bodies for a lot of people that has to do with touch, and being touched in a way that you are consenting to obviously is very important, but also that elicits some kind of pleasure response. Like getting a massage can feel so good. Someone was like, this is like a massage, but for my soul. And I was like, oh, I was like, that feels really good to hear because that's how it feels. Like, I know what it can feel like to be touched in a way that really makes you feel good and like elicits a pleasure response. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really special and really valuable to be able to do that and to be able to be a part of that.
I love that. All right. Here is my other question in relation to like online sex work and really the online world in general. We know that there was a brief moment there where OnlyFans was like, just kidding, we're not going to have any sex workers on this platform. And we know that there's still this cracking down on like online platforms because specifically their relationship to sex. And at the same time, I feel like maybe it's because it's specifically related to sex that people have such a specific point of view about those kinds of platforms. But you have platforms like TikTok, where people definitely put their whole bodies sometimes like out on display, dancing, like doing all kinds of things, like walking around their neighborhood, doing a lot of really public, like, you know, there's even like TikToks of people seeing other people film TikTok, such a public aspect, and like putting people's whole selves like on a platform.
Yeah.
Are you on TikTok?
I am on TikTok, but only as a voyeur.
Okay. That's cool.
I know. I'm like, I've never posted a video. I probably will never post a TikTok, but I love watching other people's TikToks.
Yes. And so really my question is like, do you think it's ever going to be possible? Or like, how would you help to explain that they're really not that different?
I feel like we're getting to the point where like so many people have engaged in some kind of sexy communication, whether it's like photos or videos, whatever, that like at a certain, if you care about this, you're not going to have any job applicants, or no one's going to be able to apply for this thing or whatever. We're getting to the point where like almost everybody has done some element of this in some way. That if you're saying like, oh, we would never hire somebody who has done XYZ, or you can't run for office if you've done this thing, it's then good luck finding somebody, because pretty soon here, it's going to be like all of us, or like the majority, so much so that you're going to be really challenged to find somebody who hasn't done that kind of that kind of social media presence or posting.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
So I'm like, I think we're hopefully getting there to the point where if you care about that, you're going to be sorely disappointed in the world, because you're going to figure out that almost everybody's engaged in some element of scandalousness on the internet.
And people don't think about tech. These things live somewhere in the universe. And Absolutely. So that means that it's findable, and not that should feel threatening to anybody, but I feel like it's more of a normalization of the fact that it's a thing, and it's okay. Yeah. And it shouldn't be something that, I love that, it shouldn't be something that like
gets you punished.
Yeah, gets you punished or ruins your life.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't get you the job or whatever.
Right. And it's soon we're going to have people who do sex work in positions of political office. And it's, yes, someone who is a sex worker, and maybe that person is going to be the hiring manager, and maybe they're not going to care. So I just feel like we're getting to like the critical mass now where it's like, it's going to be hard to come back from that. And I'm very excited for that moment.
Yes. Ooh, I love that perspective.
I'm certainly like an optimistic person. So like, that's how I deal with the terribleness of the world. So I'm like, maybe this will happen at some point soon.
I like it. I like it a lot. All right. I am realizing it's almost been an hour, and it doesn't feel like it at all.
No,
because I feel like we're just like hanging out, chatting over cups of tea and coffee.
Yes.
But what are you currently finding pleasure in at this very moment, or like in general?
Yes. I think my bed, one of our shared friends, Jiminika, has really inspired me to just see my bed. I think she has said that like her bed is her primary partner.
Yes.
And I am really enjoying, my mom bought me some velour sheets for Christmas. So like that fuzzy blanket that you love, that's like super soft and fuzzy, that's what my sheets are made out of. So I literally just like crawl into bed, and I'm just like, oh, so good in here.
Oh my God. It's like a Taurus's wet dream. I love that.
It is honestly so nice that I just want to hang out in bed all the time. And I'm like, hey, you want to come over and hang out in bed? Not like that. We're just like hanging out in my bed. Like, it's just, I don't want to leave my bed. So definitely spending a lot of time in my bed and enjoying the time that I get to spend there. I also, you all met my cat, and she has been like a major mental health boost for me that I like wasn't, I've certainly had a rough, I would say, a few months to a year and a half or two. But it was definitely one of the things where when the cat came into my life, I was like, oh my God, I didn't know how good this would feel to have this cat. So she's very snuggly, and she'll just come lay on my chest sometimes. And she's just the sweetest thing. So I really love like snuggling with my animals in bed, basically. That's what brings me joy.
Oh, that's so good.
Yeah.
Do you hear that? No, she's not listening. She only comes to me when I don't actually want her to come to me.
Especially busy with something.
Oh my God. I don't know if you heard her earlier. At the very beginning, she like brushed by, and she's like, meow. Like, my God.
I know. For a second, the cat was like sitting behind my phone, and I was like, oh no, are you going to do something annoying? Let's like tip it over or something. And I was like, please don't play cool.
Silly cats. love them.
Yeah, but so those two things have really been giving me a lot of joy. My bed and my cat. And my dog too. My dog's a little bit less snuggly, but he's like more of a, I'm going to snuggle you, but over here. So he'll get on the bed too, but he's not going to be like close, but he wants to be on the bed, but he doesn't want to be like snuggled up. He wants to like touch legs, which is fine. Aww. I'm into
it. That's cute. That's very cute.
Yes.
All right, Hunter, how can people find you on the internet?
Yes, you can find Self-Serve Toys is really, you know, where I put a lot of my energy. So I just tell people, if you want to find me and the work I do, go to selfservetoys.com. All of our classes are up there. So that's where a lot of my work lives, selfservetoys.com/classes. If you want to follow more of my adults, not safe for work stuff, this Instagram account you can follow. But I also have a Twitter account called Horny Huntress. That is my sex work name. You can find me there. That's also on OnlyFans. And yeah, those are probably the best places to find me.
Love it. Yay.
Awesome. Thank you so much for this. This was really great to see you and talk to you and be able to share a cup of something delicious with you.
Yes. Thank you so much for coming on Raw Bar with me and hanging out.
Yes, of course.
We'll have to do this again.
Well, friends, it's time to go our separate ways. I hope you're feeling as satiated and stimulated from today's podcast as I am. Make sure you rate and review today's episode on Apple Podcasts and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Lastly, head over to rawbarpod.com. That's rawbarpod.com to find out how you can connect with my guests and me, and how you can be a part of the Raw Bar Regulars. See you next time.